Shana Tova. There's a company in California, and they make a lot of devices that, well, electronic devices that we interact with a lot in our lives, every day for some of us. It's called Apple. I could have been referencing Facebook or Google or any number of companies, but Apple made a feature a few years ago called Screen Time. Now, it's something that enables you to find out how much you've been using the screens that they make, iPhones, iPads, laptops, desktops, how much you've been using them on average in the past several days or the past week or last week or just all sorts of statistics. There was a week at the end of July when I averaged 11.5 hours a day on those screens. Wow, pretty scary. Now, it's also scary when I look at the statistics for our kids. And like many parents, my wife and I are constantly trying to cut down on their amount of screen time. But they know that I, their Abba, their dad, is the worst. But I often tell people, and I tell myself too, that the more we use technology and rely on it throughout the week, the more we need a break from it once a week. And for me and the kids, I know that as bad as it is throughout the week, at least there's this one day when they and I try not to use these devices at all. And it's not just technology like screens, like phones and tablets and laptops we use for work to go out about our personal lives day and night. I'm not just standing up here giving some big anti-technology sermon, desist from all electricity you use. You know, that's nice on Shabbat, and I hope you try that. But I'm thinking more broadly, really about taking a break from work itself, from creating and destroying and gardening and buying things and being in control of everything, with access to everything. That's what we can do with these devices now. Because I know that we need to give Shabbat a chance. We need to try desisting, ceasing, pulling back once a week, or our intense lives might just swallow us whole. I truly believe that Shabbat can save us from our crazy lives. We can try rushing around and doing things, making things, buying, selling, working, being like a god to everything around us 7 days a week. And that's what so many people do for good reasons. Or for one evening, Friday, and one daytime, Saturday, 25 hours. We can try not working, not buying, not creating or destroying or gardening or doing laundry or controlling AI, artificial intelligence, but try just being with family and friends, resting, reading, eating. Because if we allow ourselves to just be on the seventh day, we can save ourselves from the craziness that consumes us during the other six. And I know not everyone's craziness is the same as everyone else. We have different things that stress us out or different relationships that are difficult, but I think Shabbat can help all of us. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel is probably quoted by me and Rabbi Infeld and Rabbi Solomon and other rabbis hundreds or thousands of times, probably the greatest religious thinker of the 20th century. He said, "The Sabbath is not for the sake of the weekdays. The weekdays are for the sake of the Sabbath. It's not an interlude, but the climax of living." And, you know, when you think about the days of the week, the names of the days of the week in Hebrew are Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, the first day, the second day, the 30th. That's how we call Sunday, Monday, Tuesday in Hebrew. So we could actually say that each day is titled or described as how many days it is from the previous Sabbath, or how many days we are so far on our journey towards the next Shabbat. It's the first day since Shabbat. Or it's the second day in our journey towards the next Shabbat. And in a ketubah, the Jewish wedding contract, when I'm working on it with a couple as a rabbi, or I'm reading it aloud at the chuppah, you notice the first day of the week, if it's a Sunday, is called Rishon B'Shabbat, the first day of Shabbat. It's like the word Shabbat stands in for the word week. We did a Shavuot program a couple of years ago, on Zoom, of course, about Rabbi Heschel. It's really amazing how much of an impact he still has on the Jewish world and beyond. Rabbi Or Rose of Winnipeg wrote a short piece a few years ago about Heschel as he was launching a new program. And he wrote that more than 60 years after Abraham Joshua Heschel published the Sabbath and thousands of years after this great religious institution was first recorded in the Hebrew Bible. Shabbat remains both a spiritual oasis and a bold challenge to all of us who seek to live both productive and reflective lives. He's right. It can be both of those things. Those 6 days of the week need to be productive. But on Shabbat, we can be reflective. Rabbi Rose also mentioned that Heschel explains, Shabbat not only offers us an opportunity for weekly spiritual communion, but it also has the potential to help shape the way we live the other 6 days of the week. And on that note, there's a midrash, a rabbinic explanation, that says that the 6 days of the week, the weekdays, originally had 28 hours each, but each one gave up 4 of its own hours to Shabbat. So Shabbat, getting 4 hours from each of those 6 days, got 24 hours. And those other 6 days also ended up with 24 hours, not 28 anymore. So in a way, we could say that Shabbat has a little bit of each of the weekdays in it. But we should actually turn it around, I think, and try to bring a little bit of Shabbat into each of the weekdays. And that's what we do when we spend some of Thursday getting ready for Shabbat, whether it's planning a meal or making challah or setting the table or just cleaning the house, or even if it's on a Tuesday and we think of something really nice for our Shabbat table, food or wine or flowers, we're bringing a little bit of Shabbat all the way early in the week into our Tuesday. Or even if we just have a bit of mindfulness and calm, letting ourselves feel a little bit like Shabbat on a Wednesday. I want to tell you a little bit about my own journey with this book called The Sabbath by Abraham Joshua Heschel. I first read it in a program like our high school that we have for grade 8 through 12 students. When I was in high school, I was in a program like that. It would meet at Stanford University. And a professor at Stanford who helped found this program, he had us over to his house and he taught us from the Sabbath. And I've read it ever since then. I always tell people, including my conversion class, this is the kind of book that is small, but after every page, you'll think to yourself, I need to read that again. You want to highlight almost every sentence or whole paragraphs on every page. That's certainly what I did this summer when I was rereading it. I was reading a 10-page prologue, and it took me an hour or two just to get through that. Ezra Klein is a guy who has started news media organizations and websites over a great career as a journalist and a political analyst. And he now has a podcast with the New York Times, and he interviewed author Judith Shulevitz earlier this year. She wrote a book in 2011 called The Sabbath World. Klein starts out right away talking about how a rabbi in university gave him a copy of The Sabbath, and he loves it, and he's probably read it a dozen times since. And this guy Klein is not even 40 years old. And he says the reason it's mattered to him, this book, and I really agree with him because I've been reading it on and off myself for almost 30 years, it matters because it's a critique of the way many of us live. And certainly Klein admits the way he lives, and I'll admit the way I live too. Our world is designed, he says, and so many of us live in it in a way in which we're obsessed with questions of space. We spend our days trying to master the spaces in which we live, building them. Yes, we have a beautiful building here at BI and our homes, acquiring from them, traversing them. And to do that, we're spending the time that we have to live. Heschel writes that most of us seem to labor for the sake of things of space. And as a result, we suffer from a deeply rooted dread of time and stand aghast when forced to look into its face. Ezra Klein goes on to discuss with Judith Shulevitz her book, again, it's called The Sabbath World, in which she explores Shabbat from its origins in the ancient world and the Bible through Judaism and also Christianity, and its observance and necessity in our modern world. I bought the book, The Sabbath World, myself a couple months ago, and it's really, it's great. It's incredibly personal. She explores her own relationship and journey with Shabbat and also full of this deep research. And one of the most powerful things she says is she said, if you're really trying to get to the ideal rest of Shabbat, you can't do it by yourself. You really need community. And she says that's one of the great lessons she learned from this book. And I think it's a great point that we need community. But I want to flip it around a little bit and say that Shabbat actually can make community. When we come together every Friday evening here at our synagogue, Beth Israel in the chapel or the sanctuary, or outside during the nice summer months, especially at Shabbat with a difference with our musicians a few times each summer, we're making Shabbat pleasurable and festive, and all the more so when you think about our Shabbat Kiddush lunches every week, and we're doing it together. We're relaxing and rejuvenating and basking in Shabbat with a community of other Shabbat celebrators and observers. And she gets this too. She's not ignoring this point about Shabbat creating community. And she says that the Sabbath is a four-step program for creating community and social cohesion. Wow, amazing. Four-step program. One, write laws that limit work time. Number two, make sure the schedules are coordinated. Three, make it a regular habit so it becomes a regular norm. And the fourth one, she says, the most important, make it festive, make it fun, fill it with things, meals, long walks, Shabbat naps, intimacy, and always, always, always being together. In the Ten Commandments, in the Torah, it actually comes up twice in the Torah, the Ten Commandments, once in the book of Exodus and once in the book of Deuteronomy. But these two different versions of the Ten Commandments are slightly different. And the most interesting difference is in the commandment about Shabbat. It's not just a simple commandment like do not steal. It's like a whole paragraph long. And the biggest difference, which is most interesting, is the first word of the Shabbat commandment. In one of them, in one version of the Ten Commandments, it says, Shamor et Yom HaShabbat, guard or keep the Sabbath day. And the other one, it says, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat, remember the Sabbath day. And that's so interesting because remembering and guarding are different. Our tradition for centuries has said, first of all, there's this idea that Shamor and Zachor are two words that God said at one time. If one says Shamor and one says Zachor, well, God couldn't have said two different things. God spoke and two things came out at the exact same time. We human beings can't do that, but God can. And that's encapsulated in the Lecha Dodi on Friday night. Shamor v'Zachor b'dibur echad. Shamor and Zachor in one act of speech. But our tradition has said for centuries that one of them, Shamor, guarding or keeping, is about the things we refrain from on Shabbat, the prohibitions. Not that it should feel awful and restrictive, but we refrain from certain things in order to have the Sabbath rest that we are chasing. We're trying to bring about on Shabbat. And the other one, Zachor, remember, that's about the things we're supposed to do on Shabbat, to rest, to be with family and friends, to have meals together, to do the prayers, to sing. And I always make sure with my conversion class and adults and teens, whenever I'm teaching about Shabbat, to emphasize not just the negatives, those are important to pull back from certain things, but also the positives, positive commandments. They're both important. Chizkuni, one of the famous medieval commentators on the Torah, says that this Zachor, remember, infinitive verb is used because it's a day which should dominate your thinking throughout the week, seeing it as the most important day of the week. And he even says this thing that I said before about the first day after Shabbat, the second day after Shabbat, is how we name and describe each of the days of the week. Marcia Falk wrote a book, very thick book, about 20 years ago called The Book of Blessings. She wrote so many new prayers and blessings, really powerful, after a lot of thinking and writing and research. And her beginning of the section about Shabbat, she has a poem called Will. 3 generations back, my family had only to light a candle and the world parted. Today, Friday afternoon, I will disconnect clocks and phones. When night fills my house with passages, I begin saving my life. I begin saving my life. Wow. There are two prayers in the Shabbat prayers that I've been talking about with my wife Tamar a lot this summer. They really speak to her. And one of them, they're both about Shabbat, and one of them shows up in the Shabbat Musaf service. Yismechu v'malechutecha, shomrei, 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 Shabbat v'korei oneg Shabbat. And that one, it's described in the in the translation that we have in our Lev Shalem Sidur, those who observe Shabbat and call it a delight shall rejoice. The people who sanctify the seventh day shall all be fulfilled and shall delight. Those who observe Shabbat, it's saying, it brings joy to their lives. What a wonderful thing to have in our prayers. And the other prayer that we've been talking about that's really, really, really meaningful, I think, is a private meditation for the end of the Amidah. The end of the Amidah is supposed to have some private prayer, but as is common in Judaism, one rabbi in the Talmud, his private prayer became the most famous, so we just put it in all the prayer books after that. But after that one, our prayer books in the conservative movement for a while now have had a really nice prayer for Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, and you can find it at the end of the Amidah in any Shabbat Amidah in our prayer book. And the translation into English says, "Grant me the liberating joy of Shabbat, the ability to truly taste its delights. May my heart not be weighed down by sorrow on this holy Shabbat. Help me to increase the joys of Shabbat and to extend its joyful spirit to the other 6 days of the week." Really beautiful. I was talking recently with a new member of our community who works in the lighting industry and has a lot of great knowledge about light and the history of light. And we were talking about all of this and light and Judaism throughout history. And we as human beings used to be very connected to the life cycle in so many more intense ways than we are now, birth and death and everything in between. But we also used to be more connected to light and the cycle of light, or the light cycle, we might say, throughout each day and each week and each month. And if you think about it, sunset to us now as humans isn't as the modern times isn't the big deal it used to be. Because the lights stay on afterwards, after it gets dark. But people who do a lot of camping, and maybe some of you, are often really in tune with the light and sunset and sunrise. You gotta make camp before sunset if you're camping, or it gets dark and cold and dangerous. But every day, the sun is gonna go down at a certain time, and we can't do anything about that. And that's when Shabbat starts. So it's not just a nice thing like to say that every holiday like Shabbat and other holidays start in the evening before, and every actually day on the Hebrew calendar starts the evening before. It's Vayhi Erev Vayhi Voker in the beginning of the Bible. There was evening, there was morning, the first day and each day of creation. But it's actually really significant that Shabbat starts at sunset. It's when the sun goes down. It's not just Shabbat starts at midnight Friday night when we wake up Saturday morning. It's when the sun goes down on Friday evening. I want to not just talk about the importance of Shabbat in our lives, but actually give some practical suggestions. And I've put together a whole list of suggestions. I've used for many years in my conversion class a list from Rabbi Dov Peretz Elkins. He wrote something out called The Golden Ladder of Shabbat, The Gradual Process of Increasing Shabbat Observance. And I've adapted a little bit and put together 18 suggestions. And you can find it on our website now. It's a PDF available to print or download. And I will tell you, we have a member who suggested maybe we have a support group for those trying to increase their Shabbat observance and practice. Maybe we will do that, a community of practice, if you will. But I can tell you there already is one. It's the dozens or usually 100 or more people who come to our Shabbat morning services and stay for Kiddush. And the 10 or 20 people, children and adults, who stay literally till 2 or 3 o'clock every week, just hanging out and chatting, drinking coffee, eating chocolate or ice cream, playing games, being together on Shabbat, and anyone can join. So a few highlights from this list of 18 things. Again, you can find it on our website. What can we do to really increase our Shabbat practice? We can light Friday night candles with family and friends. We can chant the Kiddush, maybe the whole Kiddush. Try that. If you just do a short version now, maybe try a longer one. Motzi over two covered chalot, or to any kinds of bread, to uncut bagels or rolls, matzah even. You can use a nice challah cover and kiddush cup to make it really special, tablecloth. We can bless each other. Children, if you have them, spouses, partners, even friends or anyone around the table, or even bless ourselves. We can discuss meaningful things around the Shabbat dinner table or Shabbat lunch table. Even if it's not the Torah portion, it could be just what you did the past week. And read. I did a whole sermon last year about the importance of reading. If we're going to try to take away some of our time on these digital devices on Shabbat, reading magazines and books and newspapers, it's a great way to fill that time. And when we think about TV and streaming, all this watching that many of us might do during the week, we might try just watching some educational or cultural programs. And maybe the next step is to not watch TV or streaming at all on Friday night, or maybe Shabbat afternoon, and then maybe try both of them, pulling back. Now, computers and iPads and phones and everything, you know, they can do so much for us. I want to make one suggestion. Again, there's more on that list, but if you try taking your phone and turning it off for real, many people don't even know how to turn off their phones or that the function even exists to turn it off completely. But if you figure it out and try doing it, some people may, for good reason, just leave their phone out on Shabbat on the kitchen counter. It's just charging. You leave it there. You don't use it. But there's this temptation to walk by and stop and look at it and see what the notifications were and you know, who might have called or texted. And I'll tell you, when I do that, I'm always thinking, oh, now I got to get back to that person. Or I can't believe they said that. Oh, no, that thing is happening. I wonder why that person called. But turning it off completely gives a newfound freedom. All those things that someone might have said or done or a news item or a text, in my consciousness, it just didn't happen until I find out about it after Shabbat. It's really powerful. Other things we might try, if you have a lot of time because you're not on your device, maybe try coming to our morning services. There's another one, traveling on Shabbat. It's not so easy to plan your trips around not getting on the plane or the car on Shabbat, but I will tell you, not so easy for it to feel like Shabbat if you're rushing around the airport, even if the experience in the airport does go relatively smoothly. So there's so many ways we can increase our connection to Shabbat, and I hope you try some of them. As a kid and a teenager, my family didn't observe the laws of Judaism in a very religious way, kashrut, Shabbat, holidays, etc. When we would go to the synagogue and afterwards, it wouldn't occur to me as a kid that stopping at a baseball card store or a supermarket or for lunch at a restaurant after services on Saturday morning, it wouldn't occur to me that there was some sort of violation of Shabbat involved. That's just not how I grew up. But we went to shul on Saturday mornings, junior congregation, and then recess and school. It was like a Saturday morning school instead of Sunday morning. But I was there every week. And Shabbat dinner, we had every week. And Friday night services, we'd go often, at least once a month. And that Shabbat dinner, that was whether I had a school play or dance or activity, we still had Shabbat dinner. Rabbi Heschel teaches us that we can have holiness in spaces, synagogues, the forest, the ocean, but more important is holiness that we have in time. Making holy time, like Shabbat and holidays, is so important. My blessing for us this year is that we make space for holiness, not just in the places where we are, but also holiness in time. Shana Tovah.